Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's back to school time, and that means it's also back to after school and before school programs for kids whose parents probably are working and need some help keeping them supervised. Joining us later on, we're going to have two women who manage aftercare programs in Central Ohio schools, and also Liz Nuskin. She's director of the Ohio After School Network. Joining us right now is Tracy Ballas. She's president and CEO of School Age Notes. It's a new Albany publisher of resources for after-school professionals. Welcome, Tracy.
Thank you, Ann.
And also Paul Young. He's a former principal and now president and chief executive of the National After School Association. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thanks, Ann, very much.
Now, both of you are local.
Yes.
So, Paul, did it just so happen that the National After School Association popped up here, or is it because, Tracy, you helped found it, or how did that work?
Actually, you know, in today's world, you can work anywhere. So as long as you have a cell phone and a computer, and I work remotely from my home in Lancaster, Ohio, but my office is in the D.C. area.
Is that where you were a principal?
No, I was principal in Lancaster, Ohio.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess one thing I think probably the most important relationship between the programs ultimately, besides the parents and the children, of course, is with the school district, because they're not just holding tanks anymore. I said that at the top of the hour, like they might have been 25 or 30 years ago, if you were lucky enough to find one in the first place. So can you talk a little bit about that relationship and how it's changed over the years, Paul?
Well, you know, this is – I put my principal hat on first, and I realized as I came close to the end of my tenure as a principal that we just couldn't do it all in schools anymore. There was simply not enough time for any kid to learn everything they needed to know and be able to do. So in my last school, we developed an after-school program, the West After School Center, and I could see that the additional learning time that the kids received in that program, which probably was the equivalent of close to 75 extra days within a year, really helped some of those needy students close their gaps. But it also provided them some of the extra special attention in a different setting that they needed, and sparked their interest. We hooked them in learning, and you could see the results of their test scores change, but their self-esteem, their behavior, their attendance, and also their parent involvement. So we realized very quickly that we needed a partner, and the after-school world provided that, and it became a complement to the school day and a very important piece of that.
So how does that relationship work now, Tracy? I mean, is this something that schools coordinate very closely with the programs?
Well, high-quality programs do. I do think that it is a challenge to make sure that there are very positive and in-sync relationships between the schools and the after-school programs. I actually would like to see more of those relationships built, because I think that it makes all the difference in the world. If you think about it, schools oftentimes are trying to get parents to attend open houses, PTA meetings, you know, parent-teacher conferences, and they have a hard enough time getting parents to come in, and which is understandable because parents are extremely busy. But with a before and after school program and summer programs, parents have to drop off their children and pick them up, which means that they have actual physical contact with the after school professionals once, twice a day. Schools would love to have contact with parents once and twice a day. So that's why that's one of the reasons why an after school program is such a critical partner, because it's like a triangle. We see the parents and children every single day. The school does too, but we make that link more frequently than they're able to do. So if the schools are connected with us, we can then feed them information about the children, the families, and vice versa.
My guests are Tracy Ballas. She's president and CEO of School Age Notes, a New Albany publisher of resources for after-school professionals, and also Paul Young. He's president and chief executive of the National After School Association. We're talking about after-school and before-school programs for kids these days, how they've changed from maybe 25, 30 years ago, and how they could improve. Probably we need more of them, according to the statistics. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do we know about is there any evidence that an after-school or before-school program – I think the after-school programs are the more academically oriented and skill-oriented types of programs. I might be wrong about that. But any studies that show that it does make a difference in success in school?
there are a lot of studies that, but I'll give you some recent experiences. Okay. Everybody in Ohio right now is receiving their test scores back or their school report cards. And particularly in Lancaster, where our programs were located before I became the CEO of NAA, we're watching now, tracking with the principals, the students that have participated in those programs and watching their academic progress. And those principals can tell me, student by student, what areas these students need help in. So that then immediately can be reinforced in an after-school program. And, they're showing probably 75% of the students in those programs are making proficient scores or meeting the standards of what they need to in the state of Ohio.
Also, the Search Institute looked at 40 developmental assets that were critical for helping a child to come out of their childhood as a successful adult. And one of the things that was embedded within that study is that a child who has three caring, nurturing adults outside of their parents that are invested in their lives have a greater chance of success. And that may be in the form of an after-school professional, a coach, a pastor, an uncle. It could be anybody. But certainly with before and after-school professionals being involved in their lives Monday through Friday and sometimes year after year after year, you have a real opportunity for those folks to truly invest and make a huge difference developmentally and success-wise for that child or youth. And the other thing that I think is important is something that was a study called the 3 o'clock syndrome.
Right.
And we take a look at parents who are working, and if you look at their productivity between the hours of 3 and 6 o'clock, in most corporations, doesn't even matter what the person does. The productivity goes down dramatically between the hours of 3 and 6. Why? Because they're either worried and wondering where their children are and if they are okay, if they can't reach them, or they're constantly receiving telephone calls and texts and emails.
I never did that when I was a kid.
I wondered, are you going to nail me right now? There was four of us at home. And we took turns calling her and telling her who was picking on us.
Right, exactly. So you can't focus at work when that's happening. So that has a tremendous impact on the productivity within our corporations.
And also people who an after-school program, unless school's called off, is very stable.
Yes.
You don't have to worry about an individual calling in sick. The program still goes on.
Correct.
How do you, Paul, make it fun, though? Because you don't want the kids to think they're going to a program where they're being tutored and further educated after 6.5, 7.5 hours in school already.
Well, that was a real issue when we started our program, and it's all done by the kind of people that you have. So if you have quality staff members that know how to nurture kids and to welcome kids, smile, and really just give kids time when you can build upon the strengths that the child has, rather than always correcting the mistakes that they're making, you can win them over. But it's all about relationships, and that's real key in the world of after school. We understand if we have to build relationships not only with the children but with the parents but with the school staff and particularly with the principal. And when you have those strong relationships, then success just follows up.
And skill building, Tracy, isn't necessarily cracking the books as soon as you start, as soon as the care after program begins. In fact, it's often not that at all, is it?
Exactly. Oftentimes, it is fun to do enrichment activities. Children enjoy the stimulation of that. But they're also looking for opportunities to be physically active, and we certainly need that to prevent childhood obesity. But there's also opportunities to find your passion in this world, whether it's jewelry making or skateboarding or reading or playing a musical instrument. Whatever it might be, it gives a child a time, as Paul was saying, to really explore and to find their passion. And sometimes that leads to vocation, and sometimes it just leads to a wonderful hobby that can help one unwind and relax for the rest of their lives.
614-292-8513. If you have a question or comment for our guests, we're talking about after-school programs. They're more important than ever. They're more popular than ever. But Tracy, Paul, there isn't necessarily a proliferation of programs because they're expensive.
Well, funding is always an issue. And of course, the federal government's main funding for after-school programs is the 21st Century Community Learning Center program. And we're certainly hoping that that stays solid with funding and increases. And locally, you know, there are school programs. Some schools will be using Title I funds or other supports for after-school programs. But a lot of them are parent pay and or subsidized in some manner. And it's a lot of after-school program people are very ingenious because, or, you know, very entrepreneurial because they can put together programs with all kinds of streams of funding and all kinds of unique ways. That's a real issue, though, for us in this profession, that we find solid forms of funding so that we can make the provisions for all the kids that really need them.
How do you know what to charge? I mean, how does that work? If you're saying sometimes it's a combination of parent pay and subsidies from the government, you can lower the cost to the parents or some of the parents?
Yeah, and the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services has a standard market rate that most programs adhere to and what they're allowed to charge.
And what is that now?
Oh, probably about $100, $125 a week, I think, for after-school care.
For one child?
Yes.
What do we know? Let's see. There's been a 5 percentage point increase in the number of Ohio children in after-school programs. That's from 7% in 2004 to about 12% last year. The lack of availability was cited by about a third of those who don't send their kids to aftercare. That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people. It's not only the lack of availability, it's the lack of available funds to be able to help programs, whether they're in the schools or community centers or faith-based organizations. The lack of funds to be able to get that seed money to get the program off the ground is critically important and very lacking. We know that the three funding streams that tend to help get after-school programs started and keep them afloat, as Paul was saying, parent tuition, mm-hmm. while in these challenging economic times, if you're trying to make a decision between paying your utilities or your rent or mortgage versus paying for your child's after-school program, you're definitely going to take care of, you know, your family's basic needs first. Another funding stream has come through charitable organizations, foundations, United Ways, and so forth. Well, we know that giving is way down for those as well. And then lastly, as Paul was referring to federal and state funding, that has shrunk tremendously also. So those are the three funding streams, and all of them are shriveling terribly, which leaves the need for before and after school programs swelling while the funds to get them started shrinking.
We have to take a break. We'll return to Tracy Ballas and Paul Young, and then joining us as well, Liz Nuskin. She is director of the Ohio After School Network. You have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Email us at allsides@wosu.org. Go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Talk to us there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Sarah Palin's picks prospered earlier this political season and buoyed her presidential prospects. But now some wonder if the steam is leaving the Tea Party at the polls. I'm Neil Conan, a very Palin edition of the Political Junkie. Plus, what happened in the primaries in Florida, Arizona, and Alaska? Ken Rudin joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation will be here from 2 until 4, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 72 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20 this morning. There's a 30% chance of rain this afternoon, otherwise cloudy skies and a high of 80 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight and a low right around 57. Sunny for Thursday and a high of 75. And looking ahead to Friday, sunny skies and a high of 78. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820, NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining the party now, Liz Nuskin. She is director of the Ohio After School Network. Liz, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
And rejoining us, of course, Tracy Ballas, chief executive of School Age Notes, Inc., and Paul Young, National After School President and President and CEO of the National After School Association. Liz, tell me what the network does.
The Ohio After School Network is a coalition of providers and stakeholders such as funders, parent organizations, public safety officials, and others that want to make sure that there is high quality and affordable and accessible after school programs in the state of Ohio. We have nearly 900 members, and we look at issues that affect funding and accessibility, and we've also developed some quality tools as well, such as guidelines for high-quality after-school programs.
So what's the difference between that and the organization that you head, Paul?
The National After School Association is the voice of the after-school professional. So we're a professional membership organization, and we really are working with those people in the field, particularly the site directors, the program directors, lots of frontline people working in the after-school field as well. But we work in tandem with the networks across the country. So if there are 50 states, there are 50 networks. We have association members in all the states. And so they're providing, as Liz mentioned, some of the advocacy work that our association is providing, more of the professional development work.
Okay, let's talk about accreditation standards. You have yours. Okay, that's Paul. That's your department?
Yes. Well, the National After School Association originally was the accrediting body of programs in the field, and now that's moved to a group in New York City called the Council on Accreditation. But the National After School Association, probably back when Tracy was very active with the organization and helped start the organization, developed a set of standards for after-school care. And that is still in place. We receive calls from that all over the country all the time, because people are interested in making sure if they're going to have an after-school program that it's of high quality. And that work and also working with the network so that everybody's talking about, being, of the best that we can possibly be is an important part of the work that NAA does.
Is this something that parents can look at and assess the program with?
Well, sure. It should be on everybody's website, and it is. And many of the networks have it on their websites. We have access to that to those standards on our website. And I would encourage parents to look at that as they're looking for programs, and to know what they need to know what quality is before they enroll their child.
And I think, Anne, you're bringing out an important point, because many parents are looking for licensed programs, but perhaps they may not understand that a program that is licensed, that is the minimum health and safety standards.
Okay.
That's the floor, not the ceiling.
All right.
And so looking at a program from an accreditation standpoint, that's more the ceiling. And even then, you could get even higher quality.
Sure.
But I think it is very important that parents know the difference between those two. And organizations such as Action for Children, which is a child care resource and referral agency here in Columbus, have a checklist that parents can take a look at, so that when they go and visit any program, they can have an idea of what things to look for, such as the staff-to-child ratio, making sure that there are enough staff that can give the proper attention to children so that they have some one-on-one relationship. Perhaps the quality of the snacks or the activities that are being done. So really, so that parents can educate themselves, because there's nothing more powerful than a parent who has the power of paying for this program or being an advocate for this program, saying, this is not good enough. I'm looking for better than this, to stimulate a program to rise to the occasion.
And if I could just add,
sure,
on the Ohio After School Network website, our program quality guidelines are available both for funders, providers, parents, and others who are interested in program quality to look at and use as a guideline.
Okay, and we'll post the links to the websites, to the Ohio After School Network, also the National After School Association, and also Action for Children, which is a website you can go to get more information on all of this and to find references and ideas for where your child might attend an after-school program. The National After School Association talked about three main factors in finding the right fit. If you have the luxury of a choice, staff layout and activities. Liz, is that kind of coincide with the three main categories that you look at as a network?
There are some major categories of quality that mm-hmm. have to do with the staff-child ratio, the
okay.
tenure of the staff, the environment, and the programming. But it's important to note that there are a lot of different kinds of after-school programs, and many of them have a different emphasis.
Okay.
They could be academic, they could be social-emotional, they could be enrichment, or they could be physical activity. So there are some other elements to different programs depending on what their focus is.
When you talk about layout, what are you talking about there as far as a factor in finding a right fit? What would a parent look for?
I think you look for space, first of all, and also whether the program is, aesthetically attractive. You're looking perhaps at what kind of facilities and how rich the program is as far as, the materials that are provided, the resources that are there, if there's books, if it's comfortable, you can go on and on and on with a list like that, I think.
Yeah, this kind of comes full circle back to what Paul was talking about at the beginning of the show, and that is it really is about relationships, because 80% of after-school programs are located in space that does not belong to them. They're borrowing the multipurpose room after school. They're utilizing the aerobics room at the YMCA. They're utilizing the church basement. And so for the professionals who are working with the children, that means they have to walk into that space every single day and transform it into an environment that feels more like home than an institutional cold space. And that takes practically a magic wand to be able to do that. And then to remind ourselves that they have very, very little storage to then put those things away and transform it back into the space for its original usage. And the only way that that can happen is if there are very strong relationships with the school principal and the custodians and the secretary and the minister or the executive director of the Y, wherever it happens to be located. Without those relationships, without the understanding of why we have to transform this space and what it takes to do so and the importance of the storage to be able to do that, it's just not going to happen. It's going to feel like a cold institutional environment, and that's not what we're going for.
And if I can pick up on something that you hinted at before, a lot of times parents don't have a choice about the after-school program that their children attend. When my children were infants, I could look at all the child care programs that were within driving distance of my home or work and pick the one that was the best fit for us and affordable. But with after-school programs, you're limited to what the school offers or where there's transportation from the school to the program. So that is a limiting factor, which makes it important for parents then to advocate for the quality elements for the programs that are available to their children.
How typical is it to have a program, an after-school program, in a grade school now? Is it pretty much everywhere or not necessarily?
The National Association of Elementary School Principals, which is a partner with the National After School Association, did a study several years ago, and they found that about two-thirds of every principal said they had some kind of an after-school program that they were working with. And predominantly those were school programs housed in their school. But there are still, a variety of community-based after-school programs that are just as high quality. And in many cases, principals are collaborating just as effectively with them, and they're off campus. They're not housed in the school. Mm-hmm. In my travels across the country, I've seen two things that make this work. One of them, there's a champion for a program someplace. That could be the principal, but it could be a community leader. And all of these turf issues that we're talking about have been worked out. Where parents can see that happening, where there's a champion for an after-school program and the turf issues have been addressed, whether that's school-based or off or community-based, you'll find a great program.
I mentioned elementary age, but what about junior high kids? That's a tough age all the way around the block. What about programs for them?
It's tough all the way around because by the time your youth is over age 12, then parents are even more reticent to pay for the tuition that is required to keep the program running. Yet who wants their 12, 13, 14-year-old child completely and utterly unsupervised with lots of time on their hands and very little supervision or direction while the parent is, at work? Mm-hmm. So middle school programs are so, so important, and yet there are very few available. And I think also that a middle school program needs to look and feel quite different than the after-school program for an elementary school.
Way?
I think it needs to mimic the development of the youth. It needs to feel more like a place to hang out. It needs to have good resources for the children and youth to do their homework. The staff need to have different skills and understanding of the development of middle schoolers. I think there needs to be an element of sports and creative outlet. That's true for the younger children as well, but it's got to be done at a developmentally appropriate, more sophisticated level than the programs for the younger children.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about after-school programs. You have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And our super-duper intern, Leticia, already posted those websites that I mentioned earlier on our website, wosu.org/allsides. So you can go there and get to those websites right away. Let's talk about exercise and nutrition, kind of that health component. How big of a deal is that now, Liz?
Well, certainly the emphasis on that is growing with the incidence of childhood obesity. And after-school programs are well situated to provide nutrition and physical activity as well as education about those important facets of life. And actually, the Ohio After School Network is working with the Ohio Department of Health to create guidelines for physical activity and after-school programs. So a lot of times kids who are not in after-school programs, if they go home after school and there aren't parents at home, they might be required to stay inside, keep the doors closed. They're not getting physical activity. They're playing Xbox. They're watching TV. They're snacking on junk food. But an after-school program or a summer program provides a great opportunity for physical activity.
So what are we looking for these days in physical activity?
Well, you know, in my position, I have the opportunity to see what's happening across the entire country. And I'm excited to be working with a group in North Carolina in the Greensboro area, the Triad area of North Carolina, called GOFAR. It's an acronym that stands Go Out for a Run. And this group, if we're successful and we can take this national, will help students in an after-school program connect with their school day, with their physical education teachers. And the ultimate goal is a 10-week program where we'll actually teach kids about nutrition and fitness and health, but also engage them in running so they'll actually learn how to run a 5K race. And the outcomes that they've already seen in North Carolina, besides the ability to actually run the 3.1 miles, is improved self-esteem, part of feeling something that they've accomplished. And even their families have gotten involved. And when they actually have the race, you've got parents and family members and the students in the program participating with their teachers in school and after school. And those are the kind of outcomes we need to see. It's proof. I mean, you know, we actually can improve our health by doing those kind of things. We just have to get our, you know, get the things coordinated to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Another component of that, though, is that all the things that both Paul and Liz are describing are about getting kids not only physically active, but getting them outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, as Liz talked about, you know, with playing video games and watching television and being closed inside because, you know, they're not in an after-school program. That's not being outside, of course. And we know from recent research that it's more important to get kids outside than ever before for the prevention of childhood obesity and getting them physically active. But we've also found that kids have increased depression and even anxiety of being outdoors because they have the lack of experience, many times in urban environments, but not exclusively in urban environments, where kids just don't spend enough time outdoors. It has such a negative effect on their body, mind, and spirit.
614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. How big a deal is nutrition then, the food you get? It's got to be very difficult to provide a nutritious meal, particularly with the mobile aspects of the programs.
In most programs, there'll be a component of the program that they actually provide a snack. And in our programs that I was responsible for in Lancaster, we were even providing supper for some kids. You have both sides. You've got some kids in this country, a considerable portion of kids in this country that don't have enough to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then others that have access to, you know, a lot of the junk food, as was mentioned. And we have a bigger job in this country, and all of us, not just our kids, all of us. Take a look. And we're all needing to be more mindful of what we eat. eat, how we eat, and how much exercise and fitness we get in a typical day in a typical week. So that's a big part of what happens in after school. We're working again with the schools because what they're providing for children to eat is very similar to what is provided after school. And I think that you'll see we take a bad rap for some of that in schools. What we provide is balanced. It's just, do you eat it? Is that all you eat? And if you eat what's provided during school, during lunchtime, during snack time, and after school as well, if that's all you eat and you get some physical activity, you'll probably be okay. But we have access in this country to too much other stuff that's not good for us. And we have to be able to – it's all about education. We have to learn what we can do, when we can do it, and what's enough.
And another concern is that many of the children who participate in the free and reduced lunch program during the school year don't have access to those meals during the summer. And so summer programs provide an important role in nutrition for those children.
You know, we were talking about that earlier. Summer programs are important for kids anyway. The same kids who need to be in care after programs need the summer programs just as much, right, Tracy?
Absolutely. And if you think about it, parents sometimes go into sheer panic when summer comes around if they don't have a program available to them, because now we're not just talking about the before or after school hours. We're talking about sometimes, you know, a 12-hour stretch that parents are trying to piece together healthy, safe, positive activities for their children and youth. And so summer programs are a critical component to being a support system for the community as well as parents and families. And if you think about all those hours that kids have on their hands, if they're not engaged in positive activities, there's an awful lot of negative activities to get involved in.
How have programs changed over the last 20, 25 years, besides the fact that there are so many more of them?
You know, I think we have a myth that we can still continue to fight, and that's that after school is no more than babysitting. And I'm here to tell you that it's not that. My experience watching it from the school side to then becoming very actively involved in it myself is that it has been just a natural extension of a typical learning day. Different, complementary, but still it's very academic focused now, and it's very child developmentally focused. That's not babysitting by any means.
You know, I read about how a Dayton area aftercare provider said that programs have evolved and improved because they focus on the child's interests. How do you do that? How do you even know, Liz? I mean, is that something you work on or work with the providers on, or Tracy?
Well, it certainly depends on the focus of the program and also the relationships that the professionals form with the children in the program. One great way to do that is through disguised learning. There's great ways to support what's happening in school and the academics, but to have fun hands-on activities. And I'm involved with a project where we're teaching providers to build trebuchets and rubber band-powered cars, where the kids can really follow their curiosity. And so there are plenty of opportunities to do that in after school, to build on the children's interests and focus it as well.
Tracy?
I think that it all stems from the staff that you hire. And being able to interest people to want to be a part of these jobs and to understand that it can be a career, not just a job, not just an hourly wage. And training for staff so that they are fully capable of doing exactly the kinds of great activities that Liz is referring to, that doesn't just happen. It comes from selecting the proper staff and making sure that they are well-trained on a regular basis to keep them motivated and to make sure that they have the skills that are necessary to truly enhance a child's life.
And I also just want to add what's happened over the past 20 years. We have a lot more research now about what works. And so that can be supported by investors in after-school programs, parents, and providers as well.
Okay. You're going to be taken off after this break, so I wanted to get in this call from Stephanie. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to find out what types of after-school programs are available for middle school students, and how do they get to these programs if they exist? How do they get to the programs if the parents are working during the day?
And I'll address that. Certainly, there are fewer programs for middle school students, And transportation is a problem. And so I understand the caller's concerns. I would recommend that she contact Action for Children to find out if they can refer her to a program and then also to her child's school. Another option is the Parks and Rec Department in her community. A lot of times offer after-school programs.
Okay, Stephanie, thanks for your call.
Bye.
Take care. We will be right back, but before we leave, I want to say thanks to Paul Young, President and CEO of the National After School Association. Paul, thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
And also, Tracy Ballas, she's Chief Executive of School Age Notes, Inc. Thanks for being here, Tracy.
Thank you very much, Ann.
And Liz Nuskin, Director of the Ohio After School Network. Liz, glad you could join us.
Thank you, Ann.
All right, we're going to have to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Developed by WOSU Public Media and the Columbus Metropolitan Library, ColumbusNeighborhoods.org features over 30 neighborhoods in and around Columbus and allows users to tell their own stories, post their own photos and video, and contribute to the collective story of Columbus. To be a part of this multimedia public engagement project or to learn more, visit ColumbusNeighborhoods.org.
And this is WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, we will hear hour two of the program, where we'll hear what humans eat on an average day in 30 countries around the world, with a photojournalist and an author joining us at 11 o'clock on WOSU 820.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
73 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies today and a high of 80 degrees. There's about a 30% chance of rain today. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 57. Sunny for Thursday and a high of 75. And looking ahead to Friday, sunny skies and a high of 78. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us now is Florence Plagens. She coordinates the after-school program at Wedgwood Village. The program serves fourth through sixth grade.
Right, fourth through sixth.
Somali Bantu students and families that live at the Columbus apartment complex. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also with us this segment is Robin Jones. She manages the Care After School program at Bluffs View Elementary in Worthington. Welcome to the show, Robin.
Thank you.
How important is that old-fashioned quiet time in the program? Is it something that kids look for?
Absolutely. They look for it. I think that, you know, they're stimulated all day long and they've been in a classroom setting. And, you know, kids have different needs. And sometimes when they come after school, they are looking for that just relaxation and a place just to kind of hang out and unwind from school.
So what sort of place like that do you have at Bluffs View?
Well, it's challenging because we have a large space. We have the cafeteria, which is our main hub. And so trying to create a quiet area for them to be able, in a comfortable area for them to be able to actually do that. You know, and we have lots of materials that we use to create that environment for them, as well as we balance the schedule out to have a certain set quiet time to do homework and such.
What about you, Florence, at your program?
We are located in the community rooms of the apartment complexes where the students live. And so it's a little bit more challenging because it depends. We have four different sites throughout Columbus. And so it depends on the size of that community room. Usually we do table work, and that's kind of our quiet times during that homework time, homework help.
In the last two segments, we talked about the relationship between the care after programs and the school. And, of course, Robin, you're right in the school, but Florence, you're not. Can you tell us about how you coordinate with the schools mm-hmm. to help them, help you help them?
Yeah, definitely. At Wedgwood, it is our newest site. We just opened in January, and We are very lucky because Wedgewood Middle School and Eakin Elementary, which are two of our feeder schools for that, for our students, are within walking distance, so the kids walk. And so we also coordinate with those schools and have our staff volunteer one day a week in the classrooms. Oh. So, you know, the students' teachers are talking with our staff, and we get feedback and are able to share that information as well.
Now, your program operates in coordination with the Columbus Public Health Department. Is that right?
Uh-huh. At our Wedgewood Village site, yes.
So why that relationship?
It's our grant. We have it's from the Health and Human Services. Our Office of Minority Health is our grant. It's a youth empowerment. And so we coordinated that. We wrote the grant with them as well as with Community for New Directions. And so it's really a wonderful collaboration. They bring in staff, program staff, and focus on at-risk behavior. So we have injury prevention programs. We did a bike safety course this summer for our summer program. So
now the kids that you focus on are Somali Bantu students. Is that the only kids that can be in the program? That's what your grant is for.
All of our programs are through Columbus State Community College, and we are an ESL, or it's ESL After School Communities.
English is a second language.
And we focus on refugee and immigrant students.
Okay.
In Franklin
County.
So
how would an aftercare program differ for you? How would your program differ from one that Robin, from a typical after school program?
You know, I think they're very similar, and we focus on the same things. We, I think, have a little bit of advantage because we are in the community and can go directly to the homes. I mean, we walk the students' homes to their door. We kind of act as that bridge because a lot of these parents do not speak English. And so, we act as that bridge.
So That does affect the relationship. Robin, how important is the relationship with the parents for you?
Oh, it's crucial. That trust that you have to develop. Of course, you're taking care of their most treasured possessions. And that's one of the universal things that Florence and I were talking about, is that the need is still the same. No matter what language they speak, it's the same need that they have. And so getting that trust from the parent and us from us from them and them from us definitely plays a role in a positive experience for the families.
614-292-8513. We have a couple of care after school providers with us right now. Robin Jones, she's the director of the care after school program at Bluffs View Elementary in Worthington. And Florence Plagens, she is the program coordinator, or the after school program coordinator at Wedgewood Village. If you want to email us, you can do that, allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and we Twitter at Ann Fisher WOSU. Tutoring and homework time are important. How do you afford qualified tutors? How does that work? Are your employees, the people who work with you already, is that something that they come in knowing how to do?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, I think the most important thing for us when we look to hire someone is their passion with children. I mean, tutoring and homework help, I think, is something that people can learn that skill. Definitely we look for experience in that, but it's really that passion for children and getting their sense that they can engage the kids on a daily basis.
How much emphasis, Robin, do you put on physical activity? Because there's always going to be some kids that don't want to do it.
Right. We actually put a lot of emphasis on it, and we put a fun spin on it so that they don't think that it's, something that's dreaded. And as the earlier segment, you talked about educating the children, really letting them know what's good for their bodies, getting physical activity. We have every day there is a physical choice, but we have some free play, first of all, where we are outside for a portion of the day, where it's, kind of children can choose what they want, whether it's, shooting baskets or playing tag. Then we have a set structured game, physical game, that we provide every day as a choice for the children. And we also have a program that we call LEAP that is 15 minutes of every day we dedicate to physical activity. It's a small amount of time, but it's fun. It's an organized game for a large group. Sometimes we break that up into two groups and coming up with really fun games and ways for them to, you know, exercise their body. And that is a portion of our program. That's one of the only portions that we really encourage and have children participate in.
What about you, Florence?
We do have a little bit of difficulty, you know, depending on, because we are in an apartment complex. And so,
right,
especially at Wedgewood Village, you know, it's almost 900 units. And so it's a very large, you know, anytime you go outside to do any physical activity outside, you know, everybody, the entire community comes out, which, you know, we encourage and have done that in the past with field days. But, for example, over the summer, we collaborated with the Human Performance Center at Columbus State, mm-hmm. and they came out, you know, every Thursday and did a kind of resistance training within strength training with the children. And then at the end of the summer program, we visited, we took a field trip to Columbus State and visited their gym and their facilities there.
Do you notice, we talked earlier as well about kids who are in programs during the summer tend to be more successful, at least at the outset, in the fall when it starts. Do you notice that the same thing?
Definitely.
A kid who hasn't been socialized to do an aftercare program, what are some of their biggest struggles?
Probably, it is probably the same for all of the children. It's that continuity between school and our after school program. Because we're in the school system or in the school building, we're a different entity from them. And so during the school day, it's much more structured. You know, we have a structured program, but it's not near as structured as the school day is. So I think probably that continuity of kind of making that transition and switch over from, you know, quiet sitting, you know, at desks to learn to having some choice, a lot of choice, and being able to, you know, let down a little bit.
A lot of choice can be hard for some kids.
Yes.
Can you find that, Florence?
Absolutely. We find that a lot. And it can be extremely, I mean, a little bit overwhelming, especially I found with, you know, the population that we've worked with. When we, just for example, it comes to my mind when we do a store day at the end of the month, our kids kind of earn, you know, fake money for coming and doing their homework. And then at the end of the month, they can spend that. They have a bank. They can save it. But that first couple of months, when they see the, you know, choices, it's just, it's overwhelming. And so, yeah, we limit the choices
and
for activities. And yeah.
Once they get used
yes.
to it.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you a couple, two things that I think are important. Number one is, what can parents do to ensure that it's going to work?
We need a lot of help from the parents. And like I said before, we have the, you know, wonderful convenience of being right there where they live. And so when we go home, if there's a problem at school or at the program, we can go directly and speak with them. And so I think it's that, you know, that they are, you know, supporting us as well. You know, we're all on the same side, same as with the teachers when we go to the school. You know, we're a united front and we are there for the child. You know, for the student.
With your program, Florence, is it mostly because parents are both working, or is it an additional enrichment experience that the parents want for their kids because they're kind of straddling two different cultures?
I think both. I mean, at all of our different sites, do we have parents, both parents work, as well as children who have only been here for less than a year that need, you know, the extra help and a step up.
What about you, Robin? How many kids are there because they have to be because their parents are working?
Right. I don't have an exact number, but most of our parents are, it's a dual income situation.
Okay. So what can parents do? What can your parents do?
Well, I think the key is communication. I think keeping that constant communication and open, you know, you know, if there's an issue or a problem, there's lots of ways to communicate that. Or if there's requests, in keeping that just that open so that we know, you know, like Florence was saying, so we're all on the same page. And that goes both ways, you know, us being able to communicate to them the kinds of things that they're, you know, they're participating in, concerns we might have, celebrations of their child development as well.
Mm-hmm. How often do you talk to a typical parent in your program?
Every day. Yes, we talk every day to a parent. When they pick up, of course,
They
come into the cafeteria to sign their child out, and there's always somebody there to greet them, to, you know, depending on the parent, if they're in a hurry, you know, if we have a chance to tell them something great about their child's day, or just a quick hello. But making sure we, you know, make a point to connect with the parent every day is important.
And Florence, you mentioned earlier that you walk the kids home.
Mm-hmm. Yes, at four of our sites, or at three of the sites, we actually had to stop at Wedgwood because it's so much larger than our other sites. It was taking, you know, 20 minutes
You have to get an early start. We only have a minute left, but I wanted to ask you about, you know, how you do your security checks and references and how that's done nowadays. Just in about a minute, though, I'm sorry to.
With staff?
Yeah.
With staff. We do FBI and background checks on all of our employees.
Same. Is that required?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that all required?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I want to remind folks that we will have the websites for Ohio After School Network and also the National After School Association. They're on our website at WOSU.org. We'll also have the website for Action for Children. If you want to learn more, you can go to those links and learn more about all of those organizations. I want to thank right now Florence Plagens. She is the program coordinator, the after-school program coordinator at Wedgwood Village. Florence, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And also Robin Jones. She is the Care After School Director at Bluffs View Elementary in Worthington. Welcome back to school, Robin.
Thank you.
Did school start today for you as well, Florence?
Yes, but we start September 13th because of Ramadan.
Okay,
and they
sure.
have Eid, so.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again for joining us. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
That's all the time we have for this hour of All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, the collision of Christianity and Islam in the area about 700 miles north of the equator. We talk with Eliza Griswold about her new book, The Tenth Parallel. And Jeff Charlotte, author of the bestseller, The Family, and the forthcoming book, C Street, talks about his trip to Uganda to meet David Bahati, who introduced the draconian anti-gay bill into Parliament. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Hear more from WOSU anytime at WOSU.org. Listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher whenever you want with the online archive. Podcast new and archived shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at WOSU.org/All Sides. And this is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus. And streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News. It's 74 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1 minute before 11 o'clock. Cloudy skies today, a high of 80 degrees. There is a slight chance of rain. Partly cloudy tonight and a low of 57. Sunshine for Thursday and a high of 75. And on your way home, get perspective on all the day's news on All Things Considered and the business news on Marketplace. Weekdays starting at 4 on WOSU 89.7 FM. And good morning. It's 11 o'clock.
The idea of you are what you eat takes on many different dimensions in the new book,
What I Eat Around the World in 80 Diets, a collection of photographs and profiles about 80 people around the world who disclosed what they eat in a typical day, to award-winning photographer Peter Menzel and writer Faith DeLuisio, from the Maasai herder to the Mall of America employee, from rice to rice-a-roni, this book compares and contrasts diets so very different and sometimes surprisingly similar. Join us in a few minutes for a conversation with Peter Menzel and Faith DeLuisio on All Sides with Ann Fisher.